I'm Nancy Solomon in for Tanzina Vega this week. In March, the House Committee on Oversight and Reform held a hearing in consideration of a bill that would make Washington, D.C. a state.
I am Muriel Bowser. I am mayor of Washington, D.C., and I'm honored to come before this committee to ask this Congress to right the wrong that happened 220 years ago when the residents of the District of Columbia were stripped of their full congressional representation.
The city's more than 700,000 residents pay more in federal taxes than 22 states, but have just one non-voting member of Congress and no senators. Events over the past year have brought the long-standing burden to a head. When Trump supporters violently descended on the Capitol in order to disrupt Congress's final tally on the general election in January, D.C. officials couldn't call in the National Guard. And D.C. officials have had trouble lobbying the federal government for an adequate number of vaccine doses. Many of the district's residents are frustrated by their city's territory status.
Renee Davis, Southeast D.C., Ward 7.
I'm Yvette Bayash, and I'm from Washington, D.C.
My name is James Lewis, and I've lived here 50 years.
My name's Marlon. I'm from Lorton, Virginia, which isn't too far from D.C.
Our producer, Patricia Jacob, asked these folks if D.C. should be a state.
Taxation without representation makes absolutely no sense. D.C. should have a voice. Can we have some representation? For me, that's everything. We can't even call in our own National Guard if there is an emergency. We have to get permission from someone else. That makes absolutely no sense in 2021.
We pay a lot and we put into this city, and it really kind of sucks that our vote doesn't count or our voice doesn't matter. I think we would just gain a bigger voice, you know, because I know moving to this city 25 years ago, a lot of people here didn't vote because a lot of people here feel that their vote doesn't count because we have no representation, because we're not a state. And I think that's disheartening. And I think becoming a statehood would encourage people even more to, you know, that their voice matters.
I think the District of Columbia should be made into a state because it gives the residents more voice. Gives us a vote in Congress, and I think we can accomplish a lot more with it being a state. It's taxation without proper representation. With becoming a state, I think we would feel more empowered.
So D.C. should become a state. I think it has a population higher than two other states. It also, being an independent entity, would allow it, you know, state rights such as an ability to have votes in Congress and things like that. I think being dependent on the federal government to provide services and things isn't appropriate for a place that has almost 1 million people living in it. You know, on a pre-COVID, any given day would have 1.5 million people working, commuting, things like that. So representation at a federal level, I think, is, as we can see, is crucial to, you know, how democracy plays out. You know, as a citizen in a country that lives in, D.C., you know, your vote doesn't necessarily matter at a federal level, such as, you know, Virginia or Maryland that we're bordered by. To a degree, violates the civil rights of those people who decide to live and make residency in D.C.
D.C. statehood is also an issue that's galvanizing young activists in the district.
I'm Ty Hobson Powell, 25 years old, and I'm a lead organizer with 51 for 51.
51 for 51 is a national coalition of progressive groups that advocates for D.C. statehood.
It is morally the right thing to do. You know, we have over 710,000 residents, majority black and brown, who pay the highest federal taxes in the nation, who have all of the obligations as Americans, but none of the same rights as it pertains to being empowered in democracy. We send men and women off to serve. We have people that serve on juries. You know, we do our part as Americans, only then to be left out of the promise of the American dream.
Ty says that the issue of D.C. statehood goes deeper than the no taxation without representation slogan.
This is also a racial equity issue. We were shorted hundreds of millions of dollars for the CARES Act, which provides relief for coronavirus to the states because we weren't designated as a state. Now, in our fight with COVID here in Washington, D.C., black and brown populations have been the most disproportionately affected by the plague of COVID-19. Go on, you look at gun violence, because people don't often equate the fight for D.C. statehood with the fight for safer streets, but it is, because D.C. on the books has some of the most progressive gun violence prevention laws in the nation. But that means nothing when we don't have a seat at the table to speak to issues like red flag laws and background checks about the guns that are coming from other states with lax regulations that are wreaking havoc in the streets of Washington, D.C., and disproportionately affecting mainly Black and brown youth.
And Ty also believes that some of the opposition to making D.C. a state is rooted in misconceptions about who really lives in the district.
A lot of why D.C. hasn't been a state is racism, but a large part of that, I believe, is ignorance, that people have no idea about what's going on here in Washington, D.C. And we saw that in our work with 5151. We would travel to Iowa, to New Hampshire, to South Carolina, and really just be able to humanize the fact that there are Washingtonians that live here outside of the politicians that occupy the Hill.
We just heard how D.C. residents are feeling about the possibility of statehood for the district, and some of the loudest voices calling for D.C. to become a state are local politicians. Janice Lewis-George represents Ward 4 on the City Council, and she joins me now. Councilmember George, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Nancy.
You know, before we jump into the conversation about statehood, I was so sorry to see the news Friday about the incident at the Capitol where a person drove a car into two Capitol police officers, killing one of them and injuring the other. What kind of impact is the January 6th riot and last week's violence having on the city?
First, I share our condolences to the family of Officer Billy Evans on their tragic loss, and I hope the other officer who was struck can make a full recovery. This was just the latest tragic example of the catastrophic impact that, you know, right-wing extremism has had on our country and on our safety. And D.C. has been in dialogue with Congress over what security should look like at the U.S. Capitol and the White House. And there needs to be a balance struck there. You know, on one hand, it's important we take measures to prevent and protect against, you know, future attacks. But we also can't build and shut down the People's House in our Capitol building from ordinary people. D.C. is already over police because we have so many law enforcement agencies operating, from D.C. police to transit police to Secret Services, federal agents, and so many more. And so, you know, we need to be smart about how we protect the district and not just adopt any measures for the sake of security theater.
What do you see as the clearest argument in favor of making D.C. a state?
The best reason for statehood is what is written on our license plates here in the district. We need to end taxation without representation. It is our birthright. There are 700,000 residents who do not have U.S. senators to represent them and who do not have representation in Congress that gets to vote in their interests. And that's just fundamentally undemocratic and unjust. And it sets a huge disadvantage compared to other states, including states like Wyoming and Vermont, who have fewer residents than D.C. And we also pay more than 22 other states in federal taxes. And so this is absolutely a modern day civil rights violation. And that's the clearest argument. It's not democratic. It doesn't speak to our values as a country. And it's absolutely our birthright.
46% of the city's residents are Black. What has been the conversation about race so far when it comes to statehood?
Absolutely. You know, we view D.C. statehood as a racial justice issue. And I think the denial of statehood for over D.C. for over the decades is closely connected to the reality that nearly half of all D.C. residents are Black. And historically, it has been much higher than that. And if admitted, D.C. would have the greatest percentage of Black Americans of any state in the union. And even when we look back in history, when Virginia took back its land, that had roots in their ability to be able to continue to have, you know, practices with Black Americans here in this country. And the other piece of that we talk about is not just, you know, Black Americans in this country, but Indigenous people. Another side of DC statehood that many people often neglect is that DC is also home to indigenous people, Native Americans that inhabit this land well before any of us. And so to this day, the Piscataway people live in DC, but are denied any representation in the US government as well. And when you account for the fact that our federal buildings are actually built on Piscataway land, the denial of statehood for those residents is even more unacceptable.
You've also framed DC statehood as a criminal justice issue. Explain how that factors in here.
Absolutely. Especially as a former assistant attorney general, DC's lack of statehood impacts our city, how our city is run. And DC has one of the highest rates of mass incarceration in the country. And that's largely because the federal government controls many parts of our criminal justice system, including prosecuting DC residents, deciding when DC residents get probation, our parole system, our laws on marijuana, and many more. And so these are unelected federal officials who aren't accountable to our communities, deciding in many cases to lock up our residents and throw away the key. And that's not the criminal justice approach that we believe in, but it's what's forced on us as a result of our lack of statehood.
So what about the Republican argument that the push is an attempt by the left to tip the Senate in their favor because DC voters overwhelmingly vote for Democrats? How do you respond to that criticism?
You know, I just think it's fundamentally unfair. You know, our representation should not be based on a partisan issues. That really is the gist of it. And to make that argument is completely undemocratic. You know, it's undemocratic, and it doesn't speak to what we believe in, no matter what state you live in this country, that this is what our forefathers imagined, you know, for this country. And some of the biggest, you know, fights in this country have been over, you know, taxation without representation. So I fundamentally believe our representation shouldn't be based on partisan issues. And there's really no political litmus test for joining the union as a state, or absolutely shouldn't be a litmus test for joining the union as a state.
Have there been any other arguments against it made?
Other arguments that we've seen come up regarding DC statehood is also the argument that somehow we would have the district residents would have some type of undue influence on Congress, and we should be a neutral body. But what I think most people don't understand is that the way our current H.R. 51 legislation is written is that there would be a capital enclave that surrounds the capital area. And so there, that still would be neutral land and neutral area. And then the outside portions where district residents like myself and 700,000 other district residents live would be considered a part of that. And so to say that somehow we would have an undue influence because of our position at the Capitol level, it doesn't make any logical sense at all.
House Republicans have also said that if DC residents want representation in Congress, they could be incorporated into Maryland instead of becoming their own separate state. Would that address the issues at the center of this fight?
No, that's not a viable alternative. And DC residents are not interested in that. Maryland residents are not interested in that either. And, you know, we know that from our strong support from congressmen like Jamie Raskins, who's talked about that before. It's just not a viable alternative for DC residents.
And why is that? Can you explain why that wouldn't work?
You know, this the history of DC and our community and what we've grown here to say, hey, well, let's, you know, have DC go back into Maryland. We have our own local government, our own communities, our own laws, and our own culture at the same time, to be able to lead in that way. The other piece of that is, you know, I heard some people making that argument, and I said, well, okay, great. Well, why do the same people making this argument, you can tell where their animus lies, because I say, oh, well, let's let West Virginia go back into Virginia. Let's South Dakota, North Dakota become one state. And those same individuals who are making this argument are up in arms about it. And so that's how you understand that there is, that's where you start to see the animus behind it and sort of the partisan issues come to play and the racial justice issues come to play when we start asking for other states to merge into one another. And they get up in arms. Those senators and congressmen specifically were very upset about the idea when we brought that back to them.
That's interesting. So the bill to make D.C. a state would need 60 votes to surpass a Senate filibuster. That's unlikely due to the 50-50 split in the Senate. But there are talks that statehood could be added to H.R. 1. That's the voting rights reform bill. Is that something that you and your colleagues on the council have talked about? Do you think that's a viable political path?
Yes, so I do. I think that's we've talked about it, and you know, I think it's right. DC statehood is absolutely a voting rights issue, and should be included in HR 1. And I do think that that's a viable path forward for DC statehood. And we're excited to see so much energy in Congress behind it. I think this year especially has really shed a light on DC statehood. In a way that it hasn't been previously. We've been front and center, whether it's, you know, because of what we happened at the Capitol, where our law enforcement stepped up to the plate to help save our country, or because we were denied our funding under the CARES Act by being a territory during COVID. And also being at the center of the Black Lives Matter protest as a city that has a huge number of Black residents, and we talk about where we are as a country, and we have a large number of Black residents who have been denied elected representation. So I think this is the best time for us to discuss this when we talk about wanting to right the wrongs of our history.
We had been talking earlier in the show about the inequities of vaccine distribution, and I'm wondering if the lack of statehood in Washington, D.C. has affected the ability of the city to get its share of vaccine doses.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. You know, I believe D.C.'s lack of statehood has affected our vaccine distribution, which affects our ability to protect the health of D.C. residents. Earlier in the pandemic, we were treated as a U.S. territory, and we were denied our fair share of federal assistance from the CARES Act to help keep our residents safe. And then when vaccines began being distributed, we weren't even given enough vaccines for our healthcare workers. And then when DC, Maryland, and Virginia asked the federal government to vaccinate essential federal workers who live in our region, they denied the request. And then finally, DC was also recently denied a mass vaccination site despite having vulnerable populations based on a flawed metric from the federal government. So these aren't just inconveniences. You know, our lack of statehood is jeopardizing DC's ability to save the lives of its residents through vaccines. Mm.
Janice Lewis-George is a council member for Ward 4 in Washington, D.C. Council member George, thanks so much for talking with us.
Thank you so much for having me, Nancy. And I will say, as a native Washingtonian, I am committed, as our mayor says, I, you know, was born without representation, but I will not die without it.
Thanks so much.
Thanks so much. Bye.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.